Hello, everybody. I'm Lisa Burwell, your host of V-Speaks Conversations with Heart and Soul. This podcast was started about 4 years ago, right at the onset of the pandemic, so that we could tell stories at a deeper level, more personal level, and elongate the storytelling from the pages of V Magazine. We're in season 4, and I'm super excited to interview Alan Branch today, who calls himself, he is a self-proclaimed Panama City Beach cheerleader.
Panama City, not Panama City Beach.
Panama City, excuse me. Cheerleader and entrepreneur, standout athlete, tech startup companies, video companies. You are into the restaurant business and you're into reimagining and revitalizing Panama City.
Those are very generous words, but yeah, I'll take them.
Yeah, oh, you should take them because your pedigree and your bio says that you can because you've done so much and you're young and you have accomplished a lot.
Young, I don't know, but that's relative, I guess.
Yeah,
thanks for the compliment.
I think it's young. I think you're young for everything that you've done. So many things to talk about, but maybe just like let's start at the beginning where you have deep roots in Panama City.
I do.
And your family has been there for how long?
My grandparents moved to Bay County, Panama City in the 1940s.
Okay.
And opened up restaurants and car washes in Panama City and Tallahassee, Pensacola, Columbus, Georgia.
Okay.
And so we've been there a long time.
Yes. And what have you seen? So you were here a long time ago. It sounds like you had an idyllic childhood, and I will get into all your credentials and awards, then your weightlifting and football pedigree and all that, which is
don't do that.
No, don't do that. Well, that's pretty impressive.
No, that was 20 years ago.
But still, yeah. You did it. And what was bench pressing 15-year title?
Oh my gosh, yeah. So many moons ago, I was a college athlete, high school, athlete, all state, and
yes.
I had the state bench press record a million years ago, like 435 or something.
That was beat only 5 years ago.
Yeah, that was a lot of weight. The kids are definitely getting stronger. They have better training and nutrition than we did. We're kind of, barbaric training at the time in the 90s. But I was a college athlete,
yes.
School for it.
But you held it. You held it. I think being in sports in high school or college usually does equip you for doing a lot of tough things and challenging things.
Yeah.
I think it's good.
Yeah, I have a friend who owns a company called 37 Signals. They have a product called Basecamp, and they only hire people who have shown a relentless attitude towards a goal in their life. Like, it doesn't matter if you become a pilot or a black belt, you have to have shown that you've relentlessly pursued something.
Really?
And I think that's what division athletes have, most of them, is the ability to relentlessly pursue.
So Basecamp, that's like the teamwork.
So
we do teamwork, and with some of our clients, we use Basecamp too. So that's your buddy?
Yeah, Jason Fried and David Hellmeyer Hansen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I wouldn't call us like hanging out in my house, but we definitely.
But you know each other.
Yeah. You should read all their books. They're fantastic entrepreneurs and awesome guys.
So I call you a techie. When I say that, I mean that in the best of ways, because you've had several companies that you've started up and sold for a nice chunk of money.
Yeah.
And also you still have some that you still own.
I do.
Where did you get that training?
Oh my gosh. I definitely was not anointed with a lot of knowledge. I grew up as a car wash kid. My family owned car washes, and I just kind of came into college about the time the internet was a thing. All technology starts as toys before it comes a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And the internet in 2000 and 2001 was this silly little thing that people weren't really making money from. And so I kind of was learning graphic design in college, but then learning to build websites kind of hooked me. I was like, this is so exciting. I got really curious, and I just realized that in the art department, I was nerdier than the artsy kids. And then I went to the business department. I was more artsy than the business kids. And so I just kind of stumbled upon the internet at the right time, right place, and surrounded myself with smart people. And
so were you self-taught though too?
Yeah, completely.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not that big of a deal actually. Most software people are very curious and they're constantly, we're all constantly learning. Like what you knew when you were 20 is not what you know now.
Right.
And so I think the learning really starts when you become an adult. It's just really training initially.
Yes. Practicing, right?
Practicing.
Always practicing. Yeah. So talk about and explain how your show,
Our Little Ware Home, sure.
Okay. I don't know anything about it except that you sold the rights to Lowe's.
We did. So we have
That's huge.
we had we were building, we had bought property. I had sold the software company and we had some extra money. And I said, let's start buying property. We bought property around Panama City. And I noticed downtown was really cheap and it didn't make sense.
Okay.
You know, in my head, it should have been much higher price because those old buildings are scarce and scarcity should drive the price up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had bought this really cheap old building downtown. And I thought, I always wanted to live in a kind of a strange old building. And we started remodeling it. And I had a video production company at the time where we're doing videos for software companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this should be a show. I don't know. So I was literally Googling like how to make a show. And I would, and then I was like, how do I get a hold of someone at Netflix and Apple TV? And so we got a hold of people and we made a pilot episode and it was us and the kids just kind of making up a show.
Just one episode?
Yeah, it was a pilot, like a little 3-minute teaser. And I got some quotes from some bloggers who do like, you know, creative homes and things like that. And so I just started emailing people. And then Lowe's said, we want to buy 10 episodes. And I said, I don't even know what that means. And so they said, just start shooting it. We'll get the paperwork done later.
And they wanted you to make 9 more or 10.
Yeah, they want us to make 10 episodes. So if you go on YouTube and search for Lowe's Home Improvement, go on their YouTube channel, you'll find our little ware home. It has about 2 million views. And it's the whole story of us building our home downtown. And there's some us at Lowe's picking out products. And it was quite an adventure. We didn't make much money on it. Uh-huh. I had to cancel a large software project to actually do it.
Oh.
But it was, you know, it was fun working with the kids. And
would you do it again?
Absolutely not. No, and Lowe's was fantastic to work with, but it was too much. So like when you're building your dream home in an old building, the last thing you want to do is rush it. And even when you first move into your home, you haven't gotten all the little piece of art that you want and you want to take time to find those things. And with a video production, you have to get it done and film the after.
Right.
And so we had to rush a little bit more than 8 months to rebuild a building.
Right.
And it should have been about a 2-year project.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't regret it, but I'm going to do it again.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, not ideal. When
been there, done that.
Yeah,
right.
Check that off the list.
Yeah, okay. Did you ever once consider leaving Panama City?
Oh, so I mean, I left Panama City for college.
Okay.
I met my wife at UAB where I played football. I had my first son in Birmingham and just missed the Gulf Coast. I missed all the stuff, sailing and scuba diving and fishing and all the stuff.
Yep.
And so we moved back and we had our daughter here. But even after the storm, so Hurricane Michael came through October of 2018. And certainly there were moments after that where you go, you know, any sort of moment like that, it's like a community-wide heart attack where you go, ooh, it's a nice time to reevaluate things. And you definitely go, should we even live here anymore?
Right.
And then you just realize that there's a void in the community of investment, creative entrepreneurship. And, you know, if not us, then who? And if not now, then when?
Mm.
And so we stuck around and we're here forever.
Right. Yeah. Little anecdotal story about that time. The Idea Boutique is our marketing company that we have that publishes V, and we represented the Mexico Beach TDC for 8 years.
Yeah.
And I was doing some different things and I just didn't feel like, and it was weird, we needed the money, but I just felt like we shouldn't take the account, which came up for renewal at the end of September.
Oof.
I was in New England and was just fleeing the hurricane and going up to New England, and then realized that Mexico Beach, this town that I went to every Thursday for 8 years in a row, once a month, was obliterated.
It was.
Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe what I was watching right before my eyes with the town decimated. And then I knew many parts of Panama City were also in horrible condition.
Horrible. Yes.
So thankfully for us over here on 30A, we didn't get hit as bad, but it was cataclysmic and it was unbelievably sad for a lot of people that I know and knew really well. The executive director, her house was destroyed and they had to move out of town and, you know, just all the things that happened. So during that time, what was it like and how did you, if not when and that. All, yeah. What did you do then?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing to know about Hurricane Michael is most hurricanes are kind of spread out. This was a very tight, small hurricane that was very much more like a tornado. Mm-hmm. And as an example, my parents live in St. Andrews, which is kind of near the Hathaway Bridge. It's mm-hmm. kind of the very far west part of Panama City. And between our houses is 3 miles. Mm. And you go from our neighborhood, the reports are 80% of the trees in the county were lost. Mm-hmm. But they were like all gone from our neighborhood. And my parents' neighborhood was just barely touched, just within 3 miles. Wow. And so completely different experience, even within Panama City. But it was, I've been through Opal. I've been through all these other hurricanes my whole life. This was like nothing I've ever seen in my entire life. We didn't have flushing toilets and running water for weeks. Mm. And you know, all our friends were displaced to the beach. The beach had condos, the beach had apartments and things to rent, and everyone left. And so it was crazy. There's still a few blue tarps on roofs here and there, mm-hmm. but it was every single person in the county had to get a new roof. Like, we had a brand new standing seam roof, and it mm-hmm. took it off.
It did, right.
And so, you know, we had $120,000 in windows replaced out of our home. Wow. So just and brand new windows. I mean, the windows were a year old. Mm-hmm. So it was like nothing I've ever seen. It definitely makes you rethink how you build things. So as someone who wants to build real estate that my children and grandchildren will inherit, mm-hmm. I want them to be around and survive mm-hmm. that. And so you start looking at better ways to build things. My mm-hmm. dad built an ICF house, which is poured concrete mm-hmm. and things like that. So it was, I don't wish Hurricane Michael recovery on anybody, on my worst enemies.
Right.
It was, there were helicopters with spotlights at night looking for people stealing things. There was the National Guard was there, Humvees. It was like another war. It was a war zone.
It was, That was crazy. Unbelievable.
And even worse than Mexico Beach. I have cousins in Mexico Beach. Yeah. They just wiped
it was gone. Mexico Beach. It was literally gone.
We went to go see my cousins 2 months after the hurricane and passing Tyndall Air Force Base. All the fences were down. Mm-hmm. There were no guards. Mm-hmm. You could have just walked onto the base and they, in your head as a citizen, you just assume like when an Air Force Base gets knocked out, like this magical,
they're gonna fix it.
Right? Like this magical, aren't the government construction crew just comes in, and does it, and it's back up in a day. Yeah. It was, there's something, they're rebuilding it now still. Ah. And so they're gonna spend like $1 trillion or $1 billion, one of the T's or B's, but the base of the future. Mm-hmm. But unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Would never want to do that again.
Well, I'll tell you what's impressive about Mexico Beach, because I have a better connection to that than Panama City and knowing people there. They had so much fight to rebuild that town and they were not going to let it take them out. And it's remarkable what they have done. And I consider a short period of time.
Agreed.
Did that happen also in Panama City?
I think so. So you look at a town that has not truly ever lived up to its potential. Mm-hmm. That's what Panama City is. We have such a special bay there, mm-hmm. very protected. Panama City has never been what it could be. And in a moment like a catastrophic event, like a community-wide heart attack, you start going, maybe we should rethink things. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should try new things. And it is a point of reflection, even for personal, of like, should I move? It's a reflection of property owners where they go, I should retire. I was thinking about retiring. Now I'm retiring. Mm-hmm. You can buy my building. Mm-hmm. And so what you have is a speeding up of decision-making. Right. So now the community goes, well, I was thinking about owning a business. I'm starting the business. I'm thinking about selling my business. I'm selling it. I'm thinking about moving. I'm moving. Or I'm thinking about coming there. Mm-hmm. They're moving there. And so I said it after the hurricane. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have repeated it then, but it was the best thing that's ever happened to us. Okay. You'll never get the trees back. The trees were the biggest loss, but we're going to look back on Hurricane Michael. We already are going, okay, that was the defining moment if we said, okay, we should be better. Mm. We're going to start working together.
A turning point for sure.
Definitely a turning point.
Wow. So when did you open your brewery history class?
Yeah. So history class, we bought the building. History class in proximity is literally across a one-way road from my home.
Okay.
And we bought the
Oh, that's good. You can walk to, for like a pub in Ireland or something. Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, that's great.
Right there.
Yeah.
And so we bought the building, that building, a history class in 2017. Mm-hmm. We had started demoing stuff out of the building. Hurricane Michael finished off the glass and the AC and the roof and all that kind of stuff. And then we started working on the project right after the hurricane. And we didn't open until 2020. Opening a brewery requires a ton of federal and state paperwork, often requires cities to rewrite ordinances because they often define breweries as industrial manufacturing, not allowed in your downtowns because they don't want, you know, manufacturing on Main Street. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of things that had to change. And then we got all this buildup and then the pandemic happened. So we missed all the PPP money, but everyone had quit their jobs. And it was like the worst time to open a brewery. But, you know, the idea of history class is to celebrate the stories. Mm-hmm. So my family's been involved in restaurants since the 40s. My grandfather named a lot of the restaurants after him. Mm-hmm. It was Jimmy's Drive-In and Jimmy's Car Wash. And I don't really like that. And so I like celebrating other people. And I love celebrating stories. You know, great towns celebrate the stories of their town. And so it's so much fun. So history classes tell stories of like, here's the first mayor and who was the first postmaster and who was the first black police officer and all the stuff that they had to face. That's what we should be celebrating. Mm-hmm. The names of the bridges that come from someone who overcame adversity. Mm. And so the idea of history class was sort of a history museum meets brew pub. And so the town, the community, our neighbors, they all realized that this was not a celebration of me and my achievements and who I am and all, it's a celebration of us. And they just have supported us way beyond we could ever imagined. Even in the pandemic, we were like, we're going to sell to-go beers to just make payroll. Yeah. And they would line the block up in cars and we would sell every beer that we had. And they kept us afloat. And they've always done that. So that's been impressive. Remarkable. It's been just amazing.
So are my notes right that you in your bio that I was reading too, that that establishment is generating $2+ million?
Yeah, we had scaled it. So when you're looking at opening a business, especially when you're opening a business, especially a brew pub, it's a balance of manufacturing. Your kitchen is actually on-demand food manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Your brew space is beer production, and you're going, how much seating do I need? And so it's this balance. And so we're looking at equipment. We no one had opened a brewery down in Panama City. So we said, I don't know if we're going to sell $10 million of beer or whatever. And so we had scaled all the systems to do about $435,000 a year. And we do about $2.2 million. And it's all because just the locals. The locals will have relentlessly supported us. They cheerlead us. They bring their friends there. It's unbelievable.
We have to go on a field trip.
Yeah, definitely. It's I mean, and we have tremendous staff. So not to marginalize the staff's efforts. We have a crew of people who care. And that's so hard to find. Mm-hmm. That just people that are all rowing the same direction, who understand the vision. It's bigger than beer. It's more important than food. Those products matter, but we're here to celebrate the town.
It's community building, right? So that's
it's a third space.
Yeah, so, it is.
Yeah.
So I heard you speak last year at the Seaside Institute, and I thought you were a breath of fresh air.
Okay, thank you.
Passionate, super funny. Like you could be a comedian. Okay. I don't I thought you were very funny. And what did you think about that? Like, what did you know about the Seaside Institute prior to you speaking? Just talk to me about that. I'm the chair of the Seaside Institute this year. I have a big mandate of wanting to grow it, which is why I'm asking you the question.
Totally. And the background is the Seaside Institute was celebrating Dover Cole.
Yes.
And so Dover Cole is a consultant who helps towns rethink what they're doing. And Victor Dover has become a good friend of mine and very helpful in just Panama City. And he's just an awesome guy. But he's there to get a prize. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to celebrate him, you know, and celebrate what he's helped our town do as someone who's guiding us through better decision making. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know what to expect. He said, do a presentation. And I wanted to do one kind of funny and, you know, but your natural instinct is to be professional. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, these jokes are either going to really land or really bomb. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they landed pretty good.
They landed pretty good.
It was entertaining, I guess. But certainly some fear. And anytime someone asks you, like, you should come speak or be interviewed, yeah. imposter syndrome pops up. We're like, I'm just a guy that writes software and I own a couple little things and I'm in a league. And you really do. When you go to the CSUN Institute, for me, it's like the all-stars of real estate development across the globe. I mean, I met so many interesting people. John Zimmerman of Active Towns is like a rock star to me. Yeah. He celebrates bike paths and walkability. And he's like just the coolest guy to me. And so, but everyone was so incredibly friendly. I've spoken at lots of conferences, mostly tech. Uh-huh. And it was such a friendly group of people, so casual. Mm-hmm. We would have dinner and you could just sit down and someone say, I would say, I know who you are. Yeah. Can I just have a dinner with you? And they were just like, come sit down. And so it was so nice. I'm definitely going to come next year.
Yes, please do.
It was just a nice weekend of learning and
big thinkers. It's hard to find places and communities and spaces where there's a lot of thinking going.
Sure.
I don't know why it's very rare, but I find it rare. And even if I don't know about a particular topic and I learn about it, I like it.
Well, and the setting matters, right? So you look at CSUN, what CSUN's done for new urbanism, invented new urbanism. And you look at it, if it was held in a conference center at a Ramada, it would not be the same event.
Right? Yeah. So it has nice trappings.
It does. And so like you want creative thinking, you put yourself in a creative environment, a place that you can kind of slow down. Mm-hmm. It's quiet. It's peaceful. And it was just a nice time. And it was a great time. It's one of my favorite conferences.
Well, good. Well, I'm going to send you more info on it too, so that you can come to more, many things going on. So I would love to talk to you and congratulate you. And I'm glad that I can say this on the air right now that you are going to be running for mayor of Panama City.
I am.
Congratulations.
Well, I'm sorry. One of the two. It's a tough job.
I'm very excited, especially just knowing your speech and then talking to you now. You're very well spoken, passionate, smart. And your legacy, you'll be really good for that.
I hope so. It's a tough job. You know, the mayor is blamed for things that they have no control over. Mm-hmm. And as someone who wants people to like them, I think we all want to be liked by people, right? Mm-hmm. That's a good quality to have. Mm-hmm. It's tough knowing that no matter, you know, even a good mayor, if you're making good decisions, there's people that are just going to think you're doing something bad, nefarious, and sneaky. And that's tough. I've always wanted to honor my parents. And knowing that there'll be a group of people who just pick at you is tough. And I don't have to have that job. You know, I could live a nice life just being what I do. But I want to do it. I've studied cities for a long time and I know I can do a good job. I think I can do it.
You can.
My opinion, I think I can do a good job. Yeah. Other people probably don't think so.
I don't think there's too many. It's ever changing right now. And it's kind of crossed into another direction right now since Hurricane Michael and whatever else has happened after that. They might be a lot more ready for you now than you might even think. But as I was saying to you in the green room, that's not green.
Sure.
One of my big takeaways from participating in the CSUN Institute the last couple of years have been, I would call it the power of the mayor and how that is where it all starts and then snowballs outside of that to evoke change and change places and spaces. Right. And I never really understood that I could define what mayorship was all about until sort of sitting in those rooms.
Right.
It's much more important than I think people understand.
Sure.
So it's such a good thing that you're doing. I think it looks so beautiful right now, what Dover Cole has redeveloped, reimagined, and all that. Did they start doing that before or after you opened the brewery? Was it at the same time?
No, well, there was an idea for a streetscape project coming back to 2015 downtown. In fact, when I first met the city manager at the time in 2015, that the first thing he showed me was the streetscape plan. It was much different than what we have now.
Okay.
And so they kind of carried that forward. And he kind of, Dover Cole and the team kind of changed things here and there. Definitely wasn't my idea. I didn't pick the colors of anything or anything like that. But history class is kind of on 4th Street, so it's a little bit of a side street from the but it's in the main sort of plaza of downtown. Mm-hmm. But it slows down traffic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do love the streetscapes. You know, change is hard for anybody. You know, people want progress. They don't want inconveniences. Mm-hmm. And inconvenience happens when you're like, well, I'm used to just cutting through the downtown really fast. And now I have to go slow. I'm used to being able to park wherever I want to. And now I got to look for a parking spot. I don't really like that. Uh-huh. And so some people realize those are signs of vibrancy. Uh-huh. And some people go, that's an inconvenience. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's tough. But the mayor thing plays into every great organization has typically a fairly strong leader who keeps the vision, who keeps reminding people of the vision and kind of pushing forward. My hero of mayors is Knox White from Greenville. I met him at the Seaside Institute. He's turned around Greenville. If you're interested in towns revitalizing, you have to look at Greenville and their transition over 30 years. And I spent 2 days with him about 2 months ago, and he was a phenomenal host, and all because of the Seaside Institute.
Wow. Yeah. That is amazing. So what, if you can say now, or if it's premature to say that, what are some things that when you get in, if you get in, but when you get in, that you would want to champion?
Yes. So local governments are... You know, what we like to say is like, I'm a businessman. I'm going to put a business lens on the organization of City Hall. Oh. That's not quite right. So like government is another kind of organization, still money in, money out. Mm-hmm. And what I found in city local governments is you have your staff and then you have your commissioners or council. They set the policy. But what happens is your staff, they're usually around a lot longer. Your city managers are around about 5 years typically, but there's such a turnover that no one ever looks down at the core problems. They all go, we're going to fix the parks, we're going to fix the potholes, but they don't look at the organization. You and I run businesses and we're constantly going, should we spend that money on this or this? Should we stop doing this? Should we clean the office less or more often? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we can scale back. Just all the little things like that, they matter. Mm-hmm. But when your policy directors, your commissioners are in and out so much, they never fix the foundation. They're always going, well, I'm going to have better parks. But they never look within and say, is there a better way to do this? Should we spend any more money or less money? And that's really what I want to dig into more of the organization. That's really not a very sexy answer for a campaign. Mm-hmm. Most campaigns are... better parks, lower taxes.
Yeah, right.
And I just want to fix the organization. Uh-huh. What I say, the reason why is as a local who's been there for 80 years, who had cash and time to invest, mm-hmm. I knew every commissioner, every department, I still do. Mm-hmm. And the processes of getting a building permit, the processes of opening a business, hosting an event were impossible. And for me, I know everybody, I have money. If it feels impossible for me who is connected, it is impossible for other people who are not connected. And if you want a town to be vibrant, it can't be Alan Branch is the only one that can figure things out. It has to be everybody else has to be able to navigate through the systems and know the rules. Even my business partner in history class and the other brewery, El Weirdo, is a city planner. So he's even worked for the city. So he knows the rules from other cities and our city. And we still had a hard time getting, the opening of history class was delayed about 6 months.
Really?
Just because of the
because city. Of permitting and things like
permitting that? Permitting and not knowing the rules and passing bad ordinances and all those kind of things. And so that's what needs to be fixed.
How can you fix that?
Well, you start listening to people who have problems. And so what happens, this is the way I was always treated and still do occasionally, is I will say, I can't open this business if these rules don't change. Can we look at Pensacola? Can we look at, Greenville, Winter Garden, Winter Park, Sanford, St. Pete, all these other cities? Here's their ordinance of how they would help someone like me. Mm-hmm. But what happens, especially in areas like downtown or blighted areas, is you are now the squeaky wheel. Mm-hmm. You are causing problems that weren't there before.
Yeah.
And you're like, these are the problems that kept this place from being vibrant. You should be appreciating me.
Yeah, right.
And so I always felt like the city should be adding rocket boosters to me saying, thank you for doing all this research and bringing us the ordinance in Pensacola of how they do awnings on their main street and their balconies on the main street. Thank you.
Yeah.
But instead they go, another thing, you want something else? What do you literally have a city planner say, what do you want now? And I'm like, what do I want now? Mm-hmm. Now here I am pouring money into the town. I don't even make any of the money off of the money I put in. It just goes into itself. Mm-hmm. And so if it feels impossible for me, it is impossible for other people. Right. And so that's what I want to try to figure out. That's going to be a, it'll never be completely solved. You just little problems, you start fixing all the, you know, every organization is the accumulation of little, thousands of little decisions.
True.
You look at your office, yeah. thousands of little decisions yeah. to make this office, yeah. the design, the colors.
Yeah.
And so even the organization at its core mm. are little policies and rules and lenses that have been kind of come down from the top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Wow. El Weirdo. I like the
yeah.
name of that.
Yeah.
That's open?
It's open. It's been for a year and a half.
Yeah, year and a half. Yeah. Okay. And is that doing really well like your doing other one too?
Yeah. So the El Weirdo is a brew pub that has tacos and and beer and also cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
And it's two blocks from history class. And okay. everyone said, you're going to just ruin history class. You're going to take all the
business. You're going to cannibalize.
Right. You're going to cannibalize your revenue. And nothing. So it's been like, I think El Weirdo does 175 or 18 million
mm-hmm.
and in like 3,000 square feet of space, does very well. El wow. Weirdo, so history class celebrates our town stories and uh-huh. people who overcame adversity. El Weirdo celebrates creatives.
Uh-huh.
Small towns often celebrate being ordinary. Everyone tries to fit in, and that you're, you know, there's a term called brain drain, where your smart people leave your little town,
uh-huh.
and you have creative drain. So people mm-hmm. move to people who are, I have friends who are writers. I have a good friend who just got a Simon Schuster contract
really?
For a book deal, and he left because he couldn't. Our town didn't embrace him like other cities can embrace their creatives. And so we celebrate the creatives of our town. We have $140,000 of art and murals wow. across the building. And it's 12 different artists that we had come in. And
Panama residents.
All residents, yeah. Uh-huh. So it was so, when you look at history class, I mm-hmm. said, if this town care, this is a bet that this town's going to care about our history enough to support this. And they did. And they said, okay, we want this town to be creative and artistic. Well, I'm going to bet we're going to see if this town supports the artists through this. This whole brand mm-hmm. is just to celebrate artists and tell their stories. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see it. And they have. They've supported it. And so I think Panama City is stepping up to the challenge of being mm-hmm. a better town.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it, you know, one beer at a time, one time at a time, maybe.
I
yeah.
think so.
Sure.
I don't know much about, you know, who will become a mayor and who won't, but I would say that on some level, and I mean this very complimentary, you might be an outlier to the conventional, stereotypical, like what is a mayor is going to be in that. Yeah. You are part of the community already,
right.
Not just working at a business, but in several businesses, right. and you're part of like rebuilding already. It's almost like you've been doing some mayoral work pre- right. To getting into the political arena,
right,
which is going to be a huge insight, going to give you a lot of insight like you already have. And it will be very interesting as the mayor when townspeople can come in to El Weirdo and have a beer with you, which will sure. be like somewhat of an outlier
sure,
situation,
it will be.
But in the best sense of right. the word.
Yeah. So I think when you started the magazine, it started with research, right? You research things and probably talk to people. And that's what I do. I'm such a curious person. I just love the way businesses work and people work and mm-hmm. dynamics. And so I've had to learn how other cities would have mm-hmm. helped their town and revitalize mm-hmm. it and gotten, you know, murals were illegal in our downtown and skateboarding was
but they're
illegal.
not anymore.
Right?
Oh, that's good.
And so, yeah. And so it's, I've had to be successful in real estate in Panama City. We've had to learn, from a variety of sources, including mm-hmm. my business partner, Tim Wheeler,
mm-hmm.
How other towns would do things and had to kind of shove that towards our city until they adopted enough.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I've had to do a lot of research. And so a lot of people get elected based on like, I'm going to lower taxes and fix the potholes. And they don't even know how the town charter works.
Right.
And they've never been to a meeting. Right. And they don't know.
You're going to raise taxes.
No, I'm definitely not. No, definitely not.
I'm kidding.
Alan's not raising taxes.
Yeah, I'm kidding. All right. Usually the one of the ethos of the podcast mm-hmm. is to share inspiration,
yeah.
motivation, words of wisdom.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I usually sort of wrap up the podcast in asking somebody, you know, and I'll set it up with what I think about you. You've done a lot of things. You've done many things that we haven't even talked
yeah,
about
yeah.
yet, like the Sap House.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
It was the Sap House is an old building. It's on the National Register right near our courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And after the storm, it was actually owned by a previous mayor. Judge Sapp actually built it in 1916, but a former mayor had purchased it, and she had done some work to it, but she had passed away, and the county wanted to make it into a parking lot. And so they were like, well, we want to do a whole overhaul of our courthouse. And so me and a friend of mine, Chris Kramer, and Kevin Wattenberger, we said, well, we want to buy it. And they had they trust us because, one, we're known people in town. We've done projects downtown. And we took the house, and we cleaned it up and fixed up, and now it's a wedding venue. It hosts weddings there. And so, yeah, we're just figuring out. I didn't have aspirations of opening a wedding venue, but here we are.
So did you – that's a good segue to this question. Did you think when you were in college and getting out and figuring out what you were going to do that you would do all of this?
No. In fact, 10 years, when we first bought property downtown, I told my wife, I will never open a restaurant. I found we've done that.
Never say never.
Never. You know. And here, life makes you eat your words.
It does.
And then about 5 years ago, I said, I will never run for mayor. That is the worst job. Wow. And here we are. Because I think I go back to most successful people will do the things it takes to be to go forward. Well, you know, people who are successful. So I'm an old offensive lineman in football, right? What is an offensive lineman? Offensive lineman is someone who lines up, hits people, hurts themselves for the running back to walk through a hole and then go, look at me, I'm so great, I'm a running back. And you're like, I just opened this hole for you. I'm hurt now.
Right.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, the mindset of that is I don't need any pat on the back. I just want progress forward. Yeah. And I don't care what it takes, I want progress. And that's my mindset. You know, I'm just a still an offensive lineman who wants progress. I don't care who else I celebrate or if I get the credit or not. So yeah.
That's so altruistic.
Yeah, it's just
the right thing to do.
I would make a lot more sense to people if they met my parents, you know.
Really, yeah. Well, we are a reflection.
We are,
For sure.
You'd probably go like, you're not that impressive. Your parents are much more impressive.
Well, I don't know about that. So are you going to keep having businesses? You're going to keep opening more businesses too?
We are. Where we have a condo project downtown in Panama City called the Mashburn Building. That's 21 units. We've pre-sold three.
Really?
I'm doing a rooftop bar there.
Was it a ground up built?
No, it's an old building. Okay. It's been there since the 1930s. It was a bomb. It was a certified bomb shelter than the Cuban Missile Crisis. So it's super thick walls. It's awesome.
So you couldn't tear that one down?
No, no. You would take dynamite. But we're celebrating Jack Mashburn. Jack Mashburn was a local 23-year-old state representative who in the 60s got elected, and he was helping designate the San Andreas State Park as a state park and realized that there was no desegregated beaches in Florida, Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. And so he pushed in the 60s. Imagine the you know, the political climate and being that person who's pushing that agenda forward. And what it was very controversial. He did not get reelected. But we have the first desegregated beach in all these states, the first official one in all the states in Panama City. And so he's someone who should be celebrated. Not, you know, it shouldn't be the branch building. It should be the Mashburn Building.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
But yeah, I'm going to keep opening businesses with partners and doing what it takes to, you know, just kind of keep things pushing forward. It's fun.
Well, it's been my pleasure to meet you. You're vivacious and you have so much of what, like, I wish so many more people had, you know, a lot of interest in doing a lot of things.
Foolish
and
ambitions.
Making a difference, right? I mean,
it's
like a slogan, but it also, when it's real and authentic, it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, it really is.
I want to do something meaningful with my time. So,
okay. So, everybody, let's go do something meaningful.
Yeah.
Alan, thank you very much. It's been great. And to your mayorship, I hope you win. And I'm believing you will.
Well, thank you.
Welcome. Thank you, everyone. I hope you enjoyed listening to Alan. Very, very interesting person. We hope you have a good day. Bye bye.